Welcome to Breaking Down Barriers, a podcast about entrepreneurship-led economic development. Here is your host, Kim Vogel, Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer for Economic Impact Catalyst.
Hello, everyone. I am so excited to be here today with you all. And we have a wonderful guest. And today our topic is the partnerships and public-private partnerships in particular, and truly how important they are. We have such a special guest today. I cannot wait to get into conversations with a dear friend of mine, former colleague of mine, Jessica Eilerman. Jessica has recently launched Forward Communities Consulting Group. She is the founder of this wonderful consulting group that is very focused on economic and community development. And she now lives in the greater St. Louis area and is doing wonderful work from out of St. Louis. So Jessica, please tell us more about your work. And I'm so excited for this conversation. So let's get started.
Thanks, Kim. I'm really jazzed to be here and talk with you about a couple things that I'm super passionate about. I have recently launched Forward Communities Consulting Group, and really the goal there is to help communities move forward, to craft a way forward that benefits the community, the constituents, the business owners. I'm really trying to take about 18, 20 years of public and public-private partnership experience that I have had and target that work throughout the communities that I serve, which is really anywhere in the United States. I'm currently working on some exciting projects that are related to community redevelopment, micro business financing, and the development of business capacity growth and development. So it's really exciting to be launching into this next phase of my professional career.
So exciting. I want to hear all about all of the work that you're doing with micro businesses. And I know that a lot of work that you have done in the past has really been really focused on this idea of public-private partnerships. So what do you believe are truly the advantages of a really good public-private partnership?
I mean, that's a great question, because I think public-private partnerships is kind of one of those economic and community development like buzz phrases, and it's really important. But I think really looking at it as a way to leverage the creativity and innovation and technological mindset that private entities can bring into development and projects, along with the investment that the public sector makes. I mean, to me, that's really kind of what a public-private partnership should do. It also helps this shared role mindset. So, you know, there's a lot of silo work being done in our world, in our nation today. You know, I live in this silo. That's how I'm defined. And then you're defined in your silo. And when we do that, we miss the collision points that can happen when we come together for a common goal. And so with public-private partnerships, that shared role mindset really forces the different players that are critical for a project to move forward to have those collision points to say, let's talk through this. Let's work together to move this goal we both have collectively forward. And I would also say, you know, in some cases, it allows projects to have an opportunity to meet more of the community goals within whatever project it is.
That's awesome, Jess. I appreciate that. So when you start looking at what the advantages are, obviously there can be disadvantages as well. So what do you see? Where do you see people getting stuck, right? Where do entities, organizations get stuck when it comes to you know, these public-private partnerships? What are the challenges?
Well, there's definitely challenges. So I appreciate this question because I think that the challenges are not so great that you can't overcome them. And I think the core is communication. There has to be clear, concise, and frequent communication when public-private partnerships are developing. You know, there's a lot of ideas that can happen, but if we aren't clear at the onset of communications of what those absolute goals are and what are the requirements for each entity. What checklist do we have to make sure each entity can do and to achieve with this project? We can say that earlier. It saves a lot of time, right? Because you're not having meeting after meeting and discussion after discussion, not really getting to the point of this is what we need to move forward. This is what we're going to need to see to move forward. And let's just kind of all agree on that at the onset. The opportunity in doing that allows for almost a deeper trust to happen at the start of conversations rather than trying to jump over those hurdles and fix things, you know, further along the process. And so to me, that's a big barrier, right? Is how open and clear can we communicate at the onset? Now, sometimes we can't do that because there isn't a clear goal. I would really warn having these discussions without the clarity of what the actual goal and purpose is for the project. I think there's another challenge, though, when it comes to financing. I would love to talk about that a little bit, whether it be now or later.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. That's great. And we can hop right into that if you want to. But I even maybe wonder if we shouldn't take it back a step here. All of these podcasts are really focused on our practitioners in economic and community and workforce development kind of from across the nation, across the globe, right? You know, and I think all of us who have been in this work for a while, we really see public-private partnerships, and they really, it always seems to, in most communities, boil down to infrastructure projects, right? So your utility projects, your, you know, big complex projects, all of that kind of stuff. I know that you did a lot of work in that realm too when you were working for the city of St. Petersburg, Florida. So can you dive into a little bit about, you know, kind of the way that people traditionally have looked at public-private partnerships for these kind of infrastructure projects? And I think everything that you said about what the advantages of a PPP are, as well as the disadvantages or the challenges are probably very relevant. But is there any other kind of takeaways that you found in that work related to this traditional definition of a public-private partnership?
Yeah, I mean, I think that traditional public-private partnerships, you know, when you first, I would say about 20 years ago is probably, you know, when you really started seeing a lot more kind of P3 discussions in the economic development world. And in a lot of ways, governments functioned very differently 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I think it would be fair to say that most were not innovative. You know, a lot of communities, especially urban cores, were starting to kind of the rebirth of the urban core. And you have a lot of people moving into areas, especially, again, urban centers. And then there was a lot of development. And then it was like, hey, I'm in the private side, and I could probably help innovate with this local municipality or county or whatever to get this project moving, and that will help my bottom line financially. Or we will share the risk because maybe it's a riskier project development. So I think, you know, at least in my experience, that was kind of where we started, you know, in those discussions. But I think in, you know, the last 20 or 30 years, things are just moving in so many different areas. And I think the discussion you would have had in the 1990s with a P3 project development is different than you will today. But that's not to say that some of those same, you know, hallmarks aren't still there. You know, how can you, you know, if I'm the private standpoint, how can you, municipality, help me make this work because I'm investing in your community? And I mean, those are questions that should be asked when there's big developments happening.
Right. No, that's great. So, you know, it's so interesting too, because I was listening to a podcast, actually one that David, our founder, had with Ian Hathaway, you know, who wrote the Startup Community Way with Brad Feld. And, you know, and Ian was really just talking about that idea of innovation. We were not talking about entrepreneurial ecosystems really until about 2012 when that, right, that lexicon became, you know, very important, I think, you know, within communities. And then you just saw all sorts of people embracing it and, you know, doing all of that, you know, all of the work that's around that. Even up to that point was leading from this kind of traditional idea of public-private partnership, but allowing public entities to really see the value of what grassroots can look like, the community from the grassroots, what it is that they can bring and what that they, you know, what they can show of value to, you know, to start pulling these threads together, if you will.
I mean, absolutely. And I feel like that goes back to this silo kind of metaphor we're using, or I've mentioned earlier. I mean, that absolutely happened too. I'm an organization and I have to worry about my own financial well-being of my organization, but I have this goal. And oh, by the way, this collaborative partner has a similar goal, but they also have to worry about their funding structure. So when you can come together, you somehow can figure that out to be able to serve a wider or meet a bigger need or work collaboratively together. And I think that that's something, you know, that experience previously has kind of required the evolution of public-private partnerships to become is not just what can you do for me, but more, hey, there's this pie of resources. Here are what the collective needs are from organizations and communities, and elected officials and public policy leaders. And like, how do we knit that together and get out of those silo investments and do it in a collective manner? And I think that that's the evolution you've seen, and we're going to continue to see, I believe, with public-private partnerships.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, we talked a little bit about the traditional, what we've seen historically. What are you seeing from this innovative standpoint? Like, what sectors or types of projects do you believe are, you know, are best suited right now for public-private partnerships? And then what do you see coming down the line? Like, what's happening?
So I love this question. I think what you're seeing is a lot of, let's talk about the more traditional kind of project development for a minute. I mean, I think what you're seeing is there's kind of a move away from just, if I do this, I'm going to receive this financial reward from a government entity. And I'm not saying that doesn't still happen. It does. But what you're seeing now are communities and I think the public sector saying, hey, we want this redevelopment to happen, for example, along a key commercial corridor district. And yet, we don't just want anybody to come in and do any old thing. We don't want the same rinse and repeat box development, right? We need to have something that meets a community goal. And that is where that kind of cross-section of the innovation comes in. For example, something that I really love that I've seen in a variety of communities in the last few years. Hey, we want to be a multimodal community. Okay, we're all talking about how important being multimodal is, especially in urban environments. Increased safety, it gives your employees choice, it has more street front pedestrian interaction to storefronts and your secondary businesses. I mean, it's just so important. However, there's critical infrastructure needed for that to happen. You need to have a bike corral and safe parking and showers and lockers and all that infrastructure to support that. So, you know, a great example is a community saying, hey, we have a goal and a vision here in this commercial corridor that we want to see an increased multimodal opportunities. We particularly want to see bike and walk, you know, pedestrian and biking happening. If you incorporate these pieces into your development project, we'll reduce the parking requirement you have for cars and vehicles. That is not necessarily a cash, you know, check being given to a developer, but what it's doing is it does impact their bottom line and it makes the project connect to the community and the goals of the community in a different way. And I think that's what we're seeing. And I think we're going to continue to see that type of innovation when it comes to a more traditional kind of development P3.
Sure. And let's talk about some innovative like public-private partnerships too. So you and I had the opportunity to work together for a number of years running a small business assistance center. What a unique public-private partnership it was, and it continues to be, right?
Absolutely.
Like it continues to be this very unique thing that, you know, you just don't see in every community. In most communities, you don't see.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So talk a little bit about that unique, innovation that we experienced, and we can share a few stories with folks about what that looked like.
Absolutely. So clearly, we're probably both a little biased about this project because it was near and dear and still is near and dear to our hearts. But it is absolutely an example of a creative public-private partnership to better serve and meet community need. It is an example of pooling resources instead of having what could be a confusing for the user situation, like what organizations should I go to for this? And they all kind of offer something similar and I'm not quite sure where to go. We really remove that barrier by saying, you come here and we're all here, right? We're all here to serve you. And if, you know, partners were not part of the financial backing, so to speak, of the entity itself, they were part of our community partnership, right? So there's this big umbrella, and we wanted to put the entrepreneur and the small business owner at the center and say, what's best for you to get the resources you need versus I have this amount of funding and I have to help X amount of people.
Right.
Through the services I have. And then another organization having similar goals. This, I think, and why it's important is because it amplifies. Okay. Number one, I stated previously, it puts the user at the center of the experience and you're building the experience with that in mind. Number one. Number two, it's amplifying all the resources that exist because there's a mindset that if that entrepreneur or small business owner's need was met, regardless of the organization who provided and met the need, that's a win for all of us. And I think that requires, you know, trust, and it requires a lot of trial and error. And it's not easy to always execute. And I think that's maybe one reason you don't see such an innovative experience in a lot of other places. But it worked in St. Petersburg. And I think a big part of that is understanding the roles and the goals. Again, back to the core of what is the goal and how are we going to communicate this in a very honest way. And I think at the core of everything, I believe that's why the organization and the partnership works. And I think that's why it's continuing to evolve and grow and meet the challenge of today.
Yeah. And just for reference for all of our podcast audience out there, Jess and I co-managed the Small Business Assistance Center. I worked for a private entity, the St. Petersburg Chamber of Commerce. Jessica worked for the city of St. Petersburg. It was, and our team was split in half. Half were city employees and half were chamber employees. And that was very purposeful. It was very much what we were trying to do so that people could see kind of the totality of support that was being offered to, with exactly like Jessica was saying, with the small business owner, the entrepreneur right in the center, right? And giving them and meeting them where their needs were versus being an entrepreneurial service organization that was more concerned about what we were actually doing. But when we put the entrepreneur right in the center, it made sense for this partnership to happen, right?
Absolutely. I would also add, Kim, that I think it helps not only elevate, you know, the organizations in the community, but what it does is it says, again, to understand those roles, you know, what critical piece does a chamber provide a community? And there is a very specific answer to that. Just as what is the role of a local government in economic and community development when it comes to small business and entrepreneurship encouragement? There's a very specific goal and unique piece that a city plays there, and that a chamber plays, and that other partner organizations play. And when you can kind of bring the conversation together, it's not so fragmented anymore. It's, again, back to the ecosystem mapping that started coming out in the, you know, mid-2000s. It's saying, these are all the things that are happening, and here's all the support. And it's kind of saying, you know, you own this area, but as part of a collective.
Yeah. So how do you see transparency and accountability really being used in public-private partnerships?
Yeah. So I personally love transparency. Coming from a lot of experience in the public sector, pre-seeing open, transparent information is critical. Okay, it's critical for so many reasons. And it's one of really my most favorite things in economic development is looking at how can we increase transparency with what we're doing. And so I could talk about this for a long, long time, but I will be brief and keep it to the question. And so, I mean, to me, this is the beauty of that innovation, the seeds planted 20 and 30 years ago, and even a little bit longer, of bringing the collaborations together to meet needs for communities and to make projects happen. Those seeds that were planted then we're benefiting from today, because innovation is the core of what we're trying to do. And innovation is such a buzzword, and it earns that because it is critical. I see all the time in projects I've worked on in the past and I'm working on now, and projects I'm hoping to work on in the future, is how do we better talk about and connect the dots for efforts that are happening in a transparent way so the community builds trust in the investments and decisions being made by their elected officials and the public servants that work for their municipalities and cities and states. I think what you see is that technology and that strategic innovation that is coming from the private sector with GovTech, really, is helping tell those stories. So it doesn't require a reporter or a concerned citizen to call and say, in the sunshine, I'm requesting the why or the list or the what's the goals of or what is the metric for this project. We can just talk about it on the upfront because we know what it is, and we now have innovative technological resources that help bridge that information gap that maybe was known here, but was really nebulous over here in the wider community. And so, I mean, I think that's just such a beautiful thing, right? That the public sector is benefiting from being open to the private sector's innovation and technological solutions to better connect projects and investments that have specific goals, right, and milestones that must be met in a transparent, open, and really constant way to the community and the members that they serve. I mean, I think that's just the most beautiful thing.
Yeah. And that's exactly what has to happen, right? So, you know, how you're saying about, again, innovation, we all know it's a buzzword. It deserves to be a buzzword. We want it to be a buzzword. What role do you see these public-private partnerships really playing in the development of new technologies and infrastructure? Obviously, we at Startup Space, Economic Impact Catalyst, we're doing this a lot. We are walking in and partnering with various levels of government across the country, you know, offering them these kind of technology innovations, these innovative ways of being able to do their work more effectively. What else do you see coming out of, you know, what these partnerships can do for the development of any new technologies or infrastructure for that matter?
Absolutely. Great question. I mean, I think it all, you know, I'm going to answer this and I kind of smile while I'm saying it, because when you know, Kim, you'll understand this. When you spend a lot of time working with entrepreneurs and small business owners, one thing you ask a lot is, what pain point are you trying to solve with your product or service? What thing do you think you can do better and meet more needs than is currently in the market? And I say that because that's exactly what's happening here. If we are willing to hear, and maybe, you know, we're always driving forward, and we should be. That's the way it is, and we should be that way, driving forward, making progress. But sometimes if we can just allow ourselves for a minute to kind of like zoom out and see this bigger picture or bigger conversation that's happening, it becomes very clear where those pain points are, or it becomes very clear where the opportunity exists to do something better. And I think you will hear that in many discussions relating to public-private partnerships. There is a pain point that has yet to be solved, right? Or there is, it's good, but it takes everybody's staff time so much that it becomes like really clunky and it's not effective or efficient. So there's an advance we can make. And a lot of times those solutions lay in a technological or innovative approach to something. And so, I mean, I think the challenge is to allow the space in these P3 discussions to say, what else could we dream here? What is possible? What can we continue to solve or move forward for our community? How can we get more conversations happening? And I think in doing that, you're going to see where innovations and technological solutions are going to continue to come to the table in this constant evolution.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree with that. That's awesome. So what advice are you giving to policymakers right now on when they're trying to consider some of these, you know, partnerships? Are they considering partnerships? Are you seeing more and more kind of coming online, or are you seeing people pull back at all? But you know, what kind of advice do you have for our policymakers out there?
Well, I mean, I think here in our local community, state, and even national political landscape, we hear one issue that unites just about everybody is more opportunity creation. Okay. And opportunity creation often, and there are numbers that support this from the SBA and others, that like 97 or 98% of our net new jobs are created by entrepreneurs and small business owners. That is truly the backbone of our nation's economy. And so policymakers want to support things in this space, right? Whether it be from the macro all the way down to your own, you know, community. Your own city. Knowing that this is so important and is really kind of a unifying discussion, policymakers sometimes don't know where to go. I want to be supportive. I know that this is important. There's some things like, you know, reducing barriers or you know, reviewing codes and making sure that unneeded or too many steps can be eliminated and there's effective processes. But I think beyond that, sometimes it's like, well, I'm supportive of this, but I'm not really sure what our role is. And so what I would encourage and what I really hope to continue to, you know, discuss in this space, how do we look at and identify community benefit as it relates to small business and entrepreneurial development? When we understand that that's important, but then can couple it with action, that's where you're going to see communities that rise above others. And oftentimes, it is not the purse strings of your local government that is going to 100% make that happen. It might catalyze it. It might fuel it. It might double the impact by a match to a private collective. And I think when we can better and more comfortably accept that it's all of us in this together, and we'll all get credit for that, that's when we're going to really start raising the needle in the bar. And that's what we want to see. Innovative incentive packages. You know, I think I get eye rolls sometimes because I will go off on tangents about, I believe incentives are an important part of a toolkit. but they have to be innovative and they need to be looking at how are we serving and what are the needs and what and how do those incentives actually help us get to what those goals and visions are for support in our communities. So doing the same old innovation packages or the same old rather incentive packages and just kind of rinse and repeat with that, I think we're missing opportunities to bring that same kind of innovation in. And then I think the other big piece is we have to be able to say no when a project is not good.
Yeah.
Policymakers, that's hard to do. I mean, I'm a former person that can tell you I've sat in rooms and it's really hard to say, wow, that's probably not going to work. You know, that's a hard thing to do, but I think it only benefits us when we say maybe not that, but what else can we do? Not no forever, but maybe no on that. And let's kind of come back to what else is possible. Instead of trying to, you know, make something that's just really not good or not going to meet the need and continue to put time and investment in that. And that's hard to do. None of this is easy.
No, it's not easy work. Number one, again, you right, it's this idea of you've got to move this thing at the speed of trust. Projects that you are currently working on, are you working on anything right now that is a public-private partnership or that has the opportunity to be a public-private partnership? And what is that looking like?
Well, what I'll say is in the spirit of where can things continue to go? I mean, I think this is a good example. I'm working on a current project right now. It's a great local business, micro business investment program. And it's not a application and you receive funds at the end of it. It's, and you do do that, but it isn't just that straightforward. It's really allowing the space for the entrepreneur to invest in themselves as well as part of the process. And again, this is an example of kind of some innovation and incentive packages. Like let's help elevate those business owners. Let's give them time to work on their business and not just in it to see what's possible for them, right? Instead of just saying, here's a list of things you can spend money on. And there's nothing wrong with that. There is a place for that. Please don't misunderstand me. There is a place for that. But I think these innovative ways of looking at growing the business owner as well as providing an incentive instead of just a flat matching grant, for example, that reaps rewards much longer. I say that to say in this program, in this one program I'm working on right now, I think the benefit is what happens after the program. What kind of connections have been formed? What kind of awareness has been received by those participants to know the greater support network that is around them? And what's beautiful is there are some partner organizations that have seen that and have said, hey, we probably have some funding for something on the what's next for these business owners. And that's great because the, you know, partnership I'm working with, they have a specific role and they are not going to be able to do those things for various reasons. And this is exactly where that collective understanding in a community pays off. Someone else can come in and fit that next step for that business. And the business owner, I mean, they're glad, they know who the organizations are, but what they see is I'm supported in this community. This community wants me to win. And that's the benefit. And I think that's such a great example of how these networks can work.
That's awesome. So that's exciting. What a great project to be working on too. And anything that we can do to be helping micro businesses across the country, community by community, is absolutely where we need to be.
Oh, for sure. And it's hard to do that. It is hard to do that. And it's hard from a funding standpoint. And that's, again, where knowing our roles and knowing what organizations can be in what spaces, growing opportunity and not just duplicating. I mean, I think that's where that rubber meets the road. And it's very, very important for communities.
That's awesome. Thank you, Jess. Any last piece of advice for any good public-private partnerships out there?
be brave. Be brave. Ask the questions. If there's a vision that is possible, talk about what that is and why. You know, sometimes we get to the, you know, bottom of the ninth and we're like, oh, we probably should have said this, you know, maybe at the third or fourth inning, and we didn't, and now we're almost at the end of the game and it's going to be too hard to do, and that, oh, that's a bummer. And I think if we just embrace being brave in these discussions, knowing that we have a shared goal, I think we're going to just see so much more benefit and develop and grow from that bravery.
Amazing. I knew you'd be an amazing guest for the Breaking Down Barriers podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back next month.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Breaking Down Barriers, a podcast about entrepreneurship-led economic development. Special thanks to our renowned guests for joining us. You can find show notes, more episodes, send us ideas, and subscribe to our newsletter on our website, economicimpactcatalyst.com. Breaking Down Barriers is a presentation of Economic Impact Catalyst and is edited by Justine Ramirez. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Breaking Down Barriers, available for free wherever you listen to your podcasts.